Available now from Graphic Audio.
You would allow your beloved husband to be tortured for the sake of your outlaw adopted daughter? We will take his nose first, right to here. It makes for a gruesome sight indeed, and assures that poor Gravis will be forever an outcast.
Why would you be doing such a thing? And yourself claiming to be a man of God?
Why, you ask? Because of your daughter, foolish woman. Because your dear Jilly's evil alliance with the heretic Avalyn could bring about the end of the world.
Why are we down here?
Here is where I will find my answers.
Get back! Would you like to see again the world of the living?
Ah, yes. The girl. How sweet that capture will prove. Perhaps I might find time to take pleasure with her before I present her to my superiors.
Where are the guards? Who are you?
A friend of Avalyn Despris and a friend of Bradwarden.
Oh! By the gods! Good show! Oh, but you'll get your due, Francis the Fool!
Search every passage and every room! All doors barred and guarded! Now! Now!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 3. Available now from Graphic Audio.
From the author of the critically acclaimed Elantris comes a beautifully crafted tale of dark intrigue, bitter rivalries, and powerful magic. In order to save his kingdom of Idris from certain annihilation, King Dedalyn must honor a treaty made long ago. He must send his oldest daughter to marry Suzabron, the God King of Alondrin.
War is coming, Your Majesty. They will attack.
If we send her, Yarda, we send her to her death.
Sending Vivenna is a poor plan, but it's our only plan.
Father, if we break this treaty, it will mean war. I am prepared to sacrifice for our people.
Lord God of Colors, forgive me. Vivenna, you will not go to wed the tyrant god of our enemies. I'm sending Ciri to your place.
Ciri, the youngest daughter of King Dedalyn, soon finds herself plunged into a world of intrigue and politics, inhabited by undead gods and zombie armies. And she quickly learns that there is a darkness spreading through the highest order of Alondrin, threatening to consume all she loves.
Vessel, doing your duty as the vessel was the danger.
You have to tell me something.
You must not bear him a child. That is the danger. This all, everything here in the palace, is not what it appears to be.
Cursed with a lecherous form of magic which causes her to feed off the souls of the living, Princess Vivenna battles to save the life of her sister and prevent the war engine of Alondrin from crushing her homeland.
Your father and Lemix were right. The Alondrin have everything to lose by not attacking you.
I'm not going to become an Awakener, Dim. I might turn a blind eye toward that lifeless for now, but I will not awaken.
In the Court of the Gods, the highest authority in all of Alondrin, Lightsong the Bold, resurrected hero of ages since past, must come to grips with his newfound immortality as he struggles to unlock the dark secret of the Pantheon of Gods and their unstoppable armies of the undead.
What do they want of me, Larimar? Do they really think I'll do it? Lights on the selfish. Do they really think I'd give my life for one of them?
You offer hope, Your Grace. A last unlikely hope.
And if they're wrong, I have no desire to die. And why should it be otherwise? I mean, we have to die to heal one of them. We're gods to them only until they kill us.
And the key to halting the baying hounds of war may lie in the hands of the one man who wants to watch the world burn. Vasher, the Warbreaker.
You. Are you here to free me?
No, Vahir. I'm here to kill you.
Don't miss Brandon Sanderson's high fantasy masterpiece, Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Weeza?
Yes, sir.
You're going out to Sector 7 to command Rascal, an upgraded patrol class.
Command a ship? Me? Arash, don't do this.
They're your people, Harris. You want to kill them now?
You're the one who was planning to take them to their deaths.
You can't stop me.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon.
Sir, there's something coming in, sir, and not at the jump point.
Bring us to Red. Weapons ready.
Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Sonny Lasky, Elizabeth Demery, Ren Casey, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Peter Stray, Jeff Baker, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, Margie Tompros, Nathan Bennett, Jonathan Watkins, Lily Beacon, Stephen Carpenter, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, Jason Stiles, Scott McCormick, Tom Simpson, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, and Kate Foster. Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 2.
Captain Tarakian offered to let Esme stay aboard the Tarakian Fortune, but she felt she had abused their hospitality enough.
You will stay in touch. I feel responsible.
I'll be fine. Whether they let me back in or not, I'll be fine. And yes, I'll let you know.
Rockhouse Major had hostelries in every style and price range. Esme checked into a modest hotel where she could afford to stay for weeks if need be. She put her few clothes away, grimaced at the thought of having to shop for more, and went out to find a communications nexus. There, she looked up Brun Meager in the Rockhouse Major database and found long strings of news stories about her, but no address. She found the address subdirectory and tried again.
Restricted. Well, that makes sense.
She entered Brun Meager, agent of record, and got a name she'd never heard of, Catherine Ann Brierly. A search on that returned only a comm unit number. Esme copied it to her hand comp, moved to a secure comm booth, and entered the number.
Sorry,
it's the middle of the night here. If this is an emergency, please press 0. Otherwise, press 1 and put a message in my morning bin.
Option 1 gave her more choices. Voice, text, video. Esme chose voice.
This is Esme Suiza, formerly of the Regular Space Service. I need to contact Brune Meager. I'm presently at Rockhouse Major at the Stellar Inn, room 1503.
She wasn't even sure which time zone Brune was in, assuming she was in this system at all. Esme walked back to the Stellar Inn, wondering if she should have stayed aboard the Fortune.
Am I really wasting money, as Gunnar said?
But the very anonymity and blandness of the hotel's rooms, the dull colors and plain surfaces, so different from the Tarakian's decor, helped her think through what it was she wanted to tell Brune, and what she thought Brune might be able to do. It seemed less practical here and now. She stretched out on the beige and cream bedspread and turned down the light.
Might as well try to sleep.
Esme eyed the time display. 6 hours had gone by.
Yes?
Esme Suiza?
Yes.
This is Kate Brierly. Does your room have a secure comm unit?
No. There's one in the lobby.
Here's my day number.
In the secure booth, Esme entered the number she'd been given. The screen lit almost at once, and the video pickup showed both Brune, still unmistakably Brune, and another blonde woman who looked to be a few years older.
Esme, what's this I hear about you leaving Fleet? Did you quit? Or did they boot you out?
Booted me out. You wouldn't have heard. Baron and I got married.
Oh, good for you. Is that why?
Yes. It's all rather complicated. I wanted to talk to you if I could.
You haven't met Kate.
Brune nodded at the other woman.
Kate Brierly. She's from the Lone Star Confederation. She's been helping me out, including with security. What with the assassinations and all? Well, we're all being very careful.
That's good.
But you need to come on down so we can talk. There's a twice-daily shuttle in Rockhouse Minor, which is all civilian. Lots of people take it just to sightsee. And there are excursions to the planet from there, too. When you get to Rockhouse Minor, go to Section B, give the guard at the private entrance your name, and say you're expected. You'll be passed through to a departure lounge for private shuttles. No one will bother you.
Brune turned to Kate.
Should we go up and meet her?
I'd let your staff handle it.
Fine, then. A steward will tell you when the shuttle's ready. Let me see. You can catch the Rockhouse Minor shuttle in about 3 hours.
If it's not full, is it usually booked in advance?
Yes, but it's usually half empty anyway. Tell the concierge. They have some pull with the transit companies. Anyway, if you catch that one, then it'll be about 2 hours after you arrive before someone will be there to pick you up.
Rockhouse Minor was quieter than Rockhouse Major, less bustling. Esme strolled down carpeted corridors bordered by exclusive shops with window displays arranged like works of art, small, jeweled, entrancing. Here, a single shoe draped with ropes of pearls. There, a scarf behind a diamond necklace. An antique chronometer, a crystal decanter. Section B turned out to be even more luxurious. The carpet, deeper piled, curved halfway up the bulkheads, and padded seats faced a series of aquaria, each housing a collection of rare marine life. The Lasafarin snailfish, with its elongated purple fin, looked as improbable as its name. Ahead was a barrier in the form of a huge work of fabric art, with a guard kiosk in front of a gap in the fabric. The guard appeared to be alone and unarmed, but Esme doubted this was the case.
May I help you, Sarah?
Yes, thank you. I'm Esme Suiza. I'm expected?
Yes. Excuse me, Sarah Suiza, but may I see your identification?
Esme handed over the folder, and he checked it.
If you would just put the fingers of both hands here. Thank you, Sarah. Sorry to have delayed you. Go right on through.
As she passed through the opening, Esme saw that immediately behind the tapestry was a large, efficiently laid out guard room where a half dozen uniformed personnel manned scan equipment, including a full-spec scan of the corridor she had just come down. Ahead in the lounge area were more clusters of padded chairs, as well as an area with tables and desks. She saw a couple of people chatting at a table, an older man lounging in one of the chairs, and no one else. She chose a chair and sank into it. Almost at once, a green-vested steward came to her.
Would the Sarah care for any refreshments?
Whatever they served here would no doubt cost 4 times as much as the same food and drink somewhere else.
No, thank you.
Sir Amiga wanted to be sure you were comfortable. This is the Barraclough private lounge, Sarah, and all refreshment is complimentary. There has been a slight delay in the shuttle. It will be several hours.
Esme had eaten at Rock House Major before she left, but that was now hours ago.
I don't suppose you have soup?
Indeed we do, Sarah.
By the time the shuttle arrived, Esme decided that if she couldn't get back into Fleet, she wanted to work for someone who had this kind of life. She could easily get used to such luxuries. The shuttle came in low, over rolling hills, green fields, and orchards, much greener than her part of Altiplano, with no soaring mountains nearby. As the shuttle eased down, she saw a small stone building and a few ground cars. Then, as it rolled to a stop, she saw 2 blonde women waving. Esme braced herself for the impact of Brun's personality as the steward opened the shuttle door. Brun would have her own agenda for Esme's visit. She needed Brun's help, but staying on track might be a problem.
I'm not here to talk about fashion. I'm here to get into Fleet.
Tarakian Fortune's Rock House Major docking space wasn't quite roomy enough for the entire pavilion, so Basil had to put up only the sign and half the office segment. With the extra crew, now helping Fleet with their inquiries, and all the Rock House cargo unloaded, he tried to estimate what their cubage and mass allowances were.
Any of the troop coming back?
He hoped so. Gunnar was grumpier than he'd been for years, muttering about lost time and wasted space.
Hey there.
Basil looked up to see a tall, lean, square-shouldered man at the door of the office. That man had been in authority somewhere, though he didn't look like the businessman his suit made him out to be. Military. Ex-fleet, maybe. But not very ex by that settled air of command.
Yes?
How many passenger spaces do you have?
Basil's neck hairs stood up. He could feel the roughness on the back of his shirt collar.
5 usually, but I'll have to check with the captain. We have a tentative reservation.
Basil wanted Bethia back on this ship if he had to drag her by the leg and shove her into Gunnar's cabin.
I'll take him. Cash on the deck. Isn't that what you free traders say?
Have a seat and I'll get the captain.
I'll just wait here.
Basil noticed how the man stood, half concealed from the busy concourse beyond, but in position to jump either way. Basil had taken that same position himself more than once when dockside trouble threatened. He retreated to the inner door, stepped through, thumbed the call button for Gunnar, and came back out at once. The man had not moved.
The captain's on his way.
Gunnar, when he arrived, looked tired and depressed, but greeted the man politely as he always did.
Passenger space. 5 cabins, but they're simple. This isn't a passenger liner.
The man gave Basil a speculative look and turned back to Gunnar.
Your man said you had a tentative reservation tying up one of those cabins. I'll pay cash for all of them right now.
There was a deposit.
Basil relaxed slightly. Gunnar was going to stand behind him.
We don't renege on deposits.
You said 5.
Total, yes. There may be 5 if the person who reserved that place doesn't show up, but otherwise there are 4 available. Where are you bound?
I'd rather not say. I want passage with you as far as Millicent.
I presume your papers are in order, yours and the other passengers?
Of course. What do you take me for?
Because we don't transport fugitives or involve ourselves in politics of any kind. We list passengers on the manifest, which we provide to the station master prior to departure, just like the regular passenger lines. This is the policy of Tarakian and Sons. And it is my duty as captain of a Tarakian and Sons vessel to so inform anyone seeking passage with us.
I'll wager you don't bother with that if it's a pretty girl.
On the contrary, sir. The company is most particular. No matter of passenger's age or sex to avoid any entanglements.
Basil, knowing Gunnar's every mood and tone, caught that Gunnar had caught on to something as well.
Well, it's no problem to me.
The man stretched as if quite at his ease, but Basil knew that stretch was as studied and intentional as Gunnar's bland tone. And as the man's arms went over his head to stretch, Basil caught a shadow that bespoke something under his jacket, which ought not to be in the armpit of an ordinary businessman.
Good. Now our run from here to Millicent is 16 days.
16 days? Isn't that rather leisurely?
We're not a fast passenger packet, sir. We're a cargo ship primarily.
Listen, I've spent some time in ships myself. I lost my ship when the company lost a court action. That's why I'm on Rockhouse. The company sold her to pay the fines. I know that route, Captain. There's a way to knock several days off. It'd increase your profit.
There's a flux bite in there, if you're talking about that yellow route.
Oh, that's what they tell you. You'd never even notice it. Fleet just yellow-tagged it because they want the fast routes for themselves. My wife's cousin's in Fleet. He told me.
Well, I'm not taking Old Fortune on a yellow route, just to save a couple of days. My company would have my ears.
Basil saw the man's hand twitch, an involuntary movement quickly controlled.
Not even if I offered a bonus? We really need to get to Millicent faster than 16 days.
What can a couple of days matter? Millicent's a bore, anyway.
It matters to me. Why isn't your concern? I'll pay extra for you to take the fast route, and I assure you the flux bite is of no concern. I've gone that way many times myself. Not the slightest bobble.
I'm not taking my ship through on the say-so of some stranger.
Not for half again the fares? Man, that'd make your profit on the voyage by itself.
It wouldn't pay me for the ship if something did go wrong. You're maybe hazarding your own life. I'm hazarding my ship and my kin. Oh, no.
The man's lip curled, and Basil noticed that his knuckles had whitened as his fists clenched. Basil shifted his own weight, ready, just in case.
Your ship is nothing but a fat-bellied old tramp.
White patches stood out around Gunnar's mouth.
Then I gather you won't want passage with us. Kindly clear the space.
You're an idiot.
The man turned on his heel and strode away. Basil leaned out the door to watch as he headed on down Trader's Row.
I suppose we should have gotten his name before we cut him loose. Did he really think I'd let him send us into a trap?
What kind of trap?
You saw as well as I did that he was military. Could have been a mutineer, or just a bad'un turned out years ago and turned pirate.
I wonder what he wanted at Millicent.
I wonder what he wanted on that yellow route. If I remember correctly, there's an extra jump point in there, with about a 2-hour transit. You have to make a low V down jump, reorient the ship. In other words, it's the perfect place for an attack. That would require another ship.
Huh. If we knew about it, maybe we could trap the other ship to get the reward.
What we could get is dead, Basil. I don't like this a bit. He'll find someone to take him on that route. Him and whoever he's got with him. Did you notice anything else?
Basil poured it all out, every detail he'd noticed. From the way the man stood in the door and wouldn't sit down, to the twitch at Gunnar's mention of the father's taking his ears.
Ears? Now I wonder...
What?
Basil, remember what Esme said? Rumors that the mutineers were followers of Lepescu and took ears as battle prizes?
So, he is a mutineer?
Might be. I suppose pirates might take ears too, but I wish we'd gotten his name.
We have some of his ID anyway.
Basil could have laughed at the shock on Gunnar's face.
How? He didn't come all the way in or sit down.
No, but he did put his hands on the doorframe, and I don't think he was wearing gloves. And since he conveniently stood in one place, I was able to reconfigure the office scans to pick him up. If you're thinking of making points with the station master, we can call up.
Not the station master. Fleet. But do something, Baz, to protect those prints on the door. That fellow just might come back and smear them himself if he thinks of it.
Right.
Basil moved to the door and glanced out. There he was again, headed their way, but stopping short when Basil appeared. Basil lounged there, putting his own hand on the door frame, but a hand span higher than the other man's, and stared him down. This was fun. This was almost as much fun as rearranging the man's face, which he hoped to have the chance for later. If he was smashing up a mutineer, no one could object too much. Finally, the man shrugged and turned away, ducking into one of the little shopping arcades that opened onto the main concourse.
Call now. Your instincts were right. He was on his way back.
I'm assuming you didn't put your hand in the same place.
Not me. I've been in enough rows to know better.
Trust you to know. I wonder if it fooled him. I'm putting on full security.
Basil assumed he was on the comm talking to Fleet, but no sound came through the security screen. Basil busied himself in the little waiting area outside the office, bustling in and out, carrying and stacking cartons. Assuming he was under surveillance, he managed to bump or touch the doorframe repeatedly, each time avoiding the area where the other man's hands had, he hoped, left their prints. He was running out of ways to rearrange the same few cartons when someone approached him from outside the line.
Tarakian Fortune?
Yes?
Basil turned around. Two men in Fleet uniform.
Great. Now the mysterious stranger will know we snitched.
Did you transport a former Fleet officer named Esme Sweezer?
Sweezer? Why?
We're trying to find her. I'm Commander Tavard. You know there's a mutiny on.
Yes?
Well, Fleet's recalling all former officers and offering them commissions again. Anyway, we were told Esme Sweezer was a passenger of yours. Is that right?
Sweezer of Altiplano? The hero of Xavier?
Commander Tavard's eyes rolled, and the corner of his mouth twitched.
The very same. Could we come aboard and talk to your captain, or Sweezer, if she's here?
She's not here at the moment, but our captain is. He may know where she's gone. Follow me.
Basil flicked on the perimeter security, which wasn't by any means as good as that in the office, but would foil idle passersby.
Anything we shouldn't touch?
Basil grinned to himself. So this wasn't about Esme. It was the answer to Gunnar's call.
Right through here.
He opened the office door with an extravagant gesture and waved them in, the waving arm happening to protect the side of the doorframe with the prints. Gunnar was already on his feet, alert.
Captain, this is Commander Tavard. Come to ask us about Esme Sweezer. He says they want her back in Fleet.
Glad to meet you, Commander.
Basil noticed at once that the office security screen was off and raised an eyebrow at Gunnar, who shook his head.
Sarah Sweezer's a fine young woman. It beat me why she was discharged.
A misunderstanding.
Commander Tavard nodded to the other man without introducing him, and the man opened his case and removed the sort of equipment Basil had seen station security use to gather evidence.
It should never have happened, but we couldn't trace her at first. I know you listed her on your departure manifest, but quite frankly, no one thought to check the manifests for general cargo vessels. The local command was sure she'd rented a yacht under an assumed name or something.
Basil watched the shorter man apply a strip of some translucent material to the entire doorpost on the correct side without revealing anything that could be seen from dockside. He himself stood where he could see through the narrow opening he'd left. He had to admire the cover story the commander had come up with. When the second man had peeled the strip away, sprayed it with a fixative, and coiled it neatly into an evidence pouch, Basil handed him the data cube that Gunnar pointed out. A copy, no doubt, of their original scan data.
I can understand why you'd want her back, but she's not here.
Is she coming back? Did she leave any luggage?
No. She told us she was going downside to Fleet headquarters on Castle Rock itself. I think she was hoping to get back in somehow.
If so, they haven't informed us yet, but I'll make a few calls and see. Oh, by the way, you might want to be on your guard for mutineers trying to make contact with civilian ships. We've had some reports of attacks that might be piracy or might be mutineer activity. You'll be getting a fleet advisory in the next day or so when we've refined the data, but I strongly advise you to stick to only green routes, even if you normally use a few yellows to save time. And if anyone approaches you wanting a fast or secret passage, I hope you'll let us know.
Of course. But I don't suppose there's a reward in it.
No. I would think your own self-interest would lead you to do the right thing. If these mutineers start robbing ships because of information they get from you civilian captains, you'll wish you hadn't been so greedy.
Gunnar nodded his appreciation of that speech.
I don't call it greedy. I call it making a decent profit from risk, which you people don't have to worry about with all your expenses paid for you by taxes on me.
I'm not going to argue with you. I just hope you'll do the right thing, or you'll regret it someday.
The two men left, trailed by Basil and Gunnar. The commander turned at dockside.
If you see Sweezer, please let us know. And remember what I said.
I'll remember. You take care of your precious fleet, and let us get on with our trading.
When the two men had walked out of sight, Gunnar turned to Basil.
What a lot of pompous twits they are, as if I didn't know how to spot troublemakers myself.
He led the way back into the office, and Basil followed, wondering who had been in the audience for that little playlet and how they'd taken it.
Sorry to be so secretive, but this second assassination has every conspiracy theorist going crazy. Even though the Benignity has claimed responsibility.
They have?
Oh, yes. Very formally, in the Grand Council. Apparently they inserted an assassin by having him impersonate a fencing instructor.
A fencing instructor?
Esme's mind raced, wondering why the head of the Grand Council would have wanted to learn how to build fences.
Sword fighting, that kind of fencing. Fooled me too the first time I heard it.
So anyway, that was fantastic enough. So of course a lot of people didn't believe it. They thought maybe our family had done it to get back at Hobart for having my father killed.
Esme felt she'd somehow missed more than a month or so of time and was being yanked into the future at high speed.
He did? I didn't hear anything about that.
Actually, he didn't. Well, not directly. It was one of his hangers-on who had hoped to curry some favor with him.
Esme held up her hand.
Wait, your father was shot, wasn't he? Or was he stabbed with a sword, too?
Shot, yes. And everyone thought it was the New Tech's militia, only it wasn't. But Pater, the man who had it done, gave enough hints to Lady Cecilia. Do you know Lady Cecilia?
No, but I've heard of her. Who is Pater?
Oh, an idiot. A distant relative of Hobart Consuline's and a pain in the rear. Hobart made him Minister of Foreign Affairs.
So, if you know he did it, what have you done about him?
Brun and Kate exchanged glances.
Oh, that's another one of those difficult bits. My mother killed him. By accident, during a fencing match.
Your mother killed her husband's murderer by accident?
That's what the report said. Mother's foil broke, leaving a sharp point, and Pater's mask failed. Of course, there are people who don't believe that either. Oh, the timing couldn't have been worse from the family's point of view.
One failure might be accident. Two failures made a suspicious coincidence. Esme waited.
It was an old foil, an antique. I don't know why they were fencing with antiques. Probably Pater, he was like that. He thought old meant stylish.
And then it broke.
Yes, as near as we can tell. Pater died several days before Hobart was assassinated. You know how it is with relative time between systems. Lady Cecilia arrived just after it happened.
Another handy coincidence?
Esme thought of her one glimpse of Lady Thornbuckle, the day Brun had come back to Rockhouse Major. The slim, elegant woman who had seemed far too tame a mother for someone like Brun.
So, some people blame your family because both this Pater and the Speaker were killed with swords?
It's more than that. We're in the Barraclough Sept, you know. And Hobart was a Consuline.
Esme didn't interrupt to explain that she had no idea what a sept was.
There used to be 5 septs, but now there are just 2. All the families, the seated families, have aggregated into these 2. They're rivals, economically and politically. The Consulines lost prestige and also profit when the Moraline mess on Patchcock came out about the rejuvenation drugs.
Rejuvenation drugs?
Yes, it was right after the battle at Xavier. I guess you've been tied up in legal matters. But to make a long story short, the Moraline pharmaceutical plants on Patchcock were making rejuve drugs and using a cut-rate process that produced inferior product. There was a lot of other stuff involved. A Benignity agent, abuse of workers. But it meant that the Moraline brothers lost control of the family company to their sister, Venezia, and profits dropped like a stone. Rejuvenation pharmacology had been their main cash cow and the reason they had so much influence in the Consuline sept.
Esme's mind grabbed at the fact relevant to her experience.
Wait, bad rejuvenation drugs? Do you know if any of them were bought for Fleet?
As a matter of fact, yes. Apparently, Fleet had noticed some problem with the rejuvenation of senior NCOs.
Yes, we certainly did.
Hobart wanted market share back. When he became Speaker, he stifled the discussion and the research and started pushing rejuvenation in the open market again. The Benignity claims that's why they killed him.
And in the meantime, Brun's uncle was trying to grab her father's inheritance on the grounds that he was not of sound mind because he sent Fleet to get Brun away from the New Tech's militia.
We thought we finally had things under control. Before the 2 deaths, we'd found evidence that my uncle had intimidated other family members into giving him their proxy or leaving him their shares. The court upheld my father's will, and Hollis is under investigation. Oh, but now...
It's a mess.
I can see why. And then the mutiny?
Oh, yeah. The Consulines would probably declare open war on the Barraclofs if they had the military to do it with. But so far, the Loyalists and the fleet are holding firm. The mutineers, whew. We hear rumors that some of them have offered their services to various families, including the Consulines.
Mercenaries.
Yep. Here's the house.
Appledale reminded Esme a little of the big house on the Suiza Estancia. Large, surrounded by gardens and orchards and outbuildings. Inside, Brunn led the way to a room that overlooked a walled garden and swimming pool and settled into a chintz-covered easy chair.
Now, Esme, let's hear your news.
Esme made the story as brief as she could. The quarrel with Admiral Serrano, the emergency call announcing the mutiny, her hasty marriage to Baron while in transit to their new assignments, her abrupt dismissal from Fleet.
That doesn't sound like her. She's a Serrano, yes, the temper and all that, but I found her fair. She has to know that whatever happened hundreds of years ago isn't your fault.
It's a matter of honor, she said.
Well, honor is highly overrated, at least when it makes people do stupid things.
We think a lot of honor on Altiplano, and in Fleet.
Brunn waved her hand.
There's honor and honor. I'm thinking of the stupid kind, like children taking dares. Well, not that I didn't. But I wasn't using my head when I did.
Leaving honor out of it, why do you think Admiral Serrano changed her mind and kicked you out?
Because I was told Admiral Serrano had signed the order.
Well, there's lots of Admiral Serrano. Maybe it wasn't Baron's grandmother after all. I liked her, even if she was a bit scary.
Esme thought of the cold eyes that had been so full of enmity.
But it must have been Vita Serrano. Who else would do it if she didn't want it done?
Stupidity and confusion. Happens all the time in big organizations. Someone thought he could make Baron's grandmother happy by canning you, not knowing that she'd changed her mind. Who else was at this family meeting?
I didn't even get to meet them all.
What you need is a good lawyer. I can use my influence, but we need help. Kevil Mahoney's the obvious one. I think he's getting his new arm grown in. But if he can't do it, he still has contacts who can help us. And perhaps we should move into town for a while. I don't think it'll be that much harder to secure the townhouse than Appledale. I'll call George.
Kevil Mahoney grinned as Brunn and Esme came into his room at the rehab center.
Ah, I was wondering if that was your cheerful voice I heard coming down the hall. And this is the redoubtable Lieutenant Sweezer, I presume.
Not a lieutenant anymore, sir.
What'd you do, Brunn? Poison her mind with your anti-discipline nonsense?
Uncle Kevil, she was kicked out unfairly. We have to do something.
You mean you want me to do something?
To start with, to listen to the whole story. Go ahead, Esme.
This seemed brusque at best, but Kevil nodded to Esme.
Go on, then.
Esme retold the story, beginning with Admiral Serrano's attack on her. Kevil listened with his eyes closed. She wondered if he were dozing off. But when she finished, he opened them and began asking questions. The same questions as Brunn and Kate at first, and then more and more, questions that had never occurred to her.
Altiplano's trade policy?
Esme knew nothing about it.
Altiplano's association with the Crescent Worlds?
Nothing so far as she knew.
The Emeralds?
Esme felt that he was dragging out of her everything she knew, had assumed, or even imagined about her homeworld. Finally, he stopped.
Interesting.
He closed his eyes again. Esme took the chance to get a drink of water.
Very interesting indeed. I was talking to Bunny about this sort of thing before he died. We were both aware that the underlying structure of the Familius Regnant had not kept pace with the spatial and population growth.
In what way?
Well, when you come right down to it, the Familius began as a commercial consortium dedicated to profit. A consortium that agreed to pool resources to control space piracy, which was cutting into everyone's profits. And if that sounds like a government to you, Brunn, it's because your very expensive finishing school taught you more about social graces than social sciences.
But aren't governments always designed for the profit of the citizens?
Good gracious, no. Where'd you get that idea? Altiplano, of course. One of the grand social experiments of history. Sorry. Didn't mean to be sarcastic.
Kevil hitched himself around in bed.
Blast this thing. I want to move my shoulder. No, I can't. Not for another 23 hours and 16 minutes.
That soon?
That long. It feels like forever. But this is an interesting distraction. It's certainly not often the two beautiful young women have come to me to listen to a lecture on legal history.
Oh, don't be silly, Uncle Cavill.
I'm not. I'm quite serious. And I hope you will be, you young scamp. It's time to grow up, Charlotte Brunhilde. You and me and the entire Familius. We're like a child who's been playing games in a large walled garden. Now we're outside and it's not make-believe.
I think I have seen a bit of the real world.
Yes, and Lieutenant Sweezer here has seen more. But there's a lot neither of you knows about. Remember when Otala Moraline disappeared, and there was all that trouble on Patchcock? That's when your father and I began to realize how deep the chasm was, just on the topic of rejuvenation therapy alone. The Familius isn't like the other multi-star organizations we know of. There's no coherence to it. It just sort of grew, absorbing anything that lay in its sphere of influence.
Kate says something like that, but she keeps harping on a constitution.
Yes, well, the Lone Star Confederation is a constitutional government. Until we moved in, the Crescent Worlds were a religious one. Most governments start with either a common culture or a common political theory. We didn't. This laissez-faire approach worked very well for a long time because the founding septs were rich, and the worlds they gathered in brought them even more profits. But it couldn't go on forever, especially not when most of the people who actually had power started acting like dilettantes.
A brisk woman in a flowered jumper came in.
Excuse me, it's time to turn the tank, Sir Mahoney.
Esme and Brun stepped back as she came to the bed.
Visitors out, please. This will take about a half hour to rotate and reposition.
Esme thought about what Kevil Mahoney had said and the others had said, but none of it satisfied her. And when the nurse told them they could go back into Kevil's room, she spoke up.
I think your priorities are all off.
What do you mean? What could be more important than getting the government straightened out?
Putting down this mutiny. Look, if you don't have a loyal military, you're easy prey. The mutineers may be trying for a military coup. The Benignity says it won't invade right now, but why would you believe them? They admit to murdering one head of state, and they say they've done it before. They tried to take Xavier just a few years ago. I bet they still want it. Oh, and the Blood Horde.
Oh, they're just ignorant barbarians. They're not a real threat.
Tell that to the people who died on Kosciusko. Or the people they've hit on planets and stations with their piracy. They're not as serious a threat to the entire Familius as the Benignity, but I wouldn't call them negligible either. They would certainly disrupt trade. And if they got hold of some of our frontline ships and weapons?
Huh, you think like an admiral. That's not a criticism. We need that input too.
I was looking up some history last night. All the way back to Old Earth, political entities had to start with security first and then worry about organization. Even the old kingships, it said.
People gather to a government that makes them feel safe. Well, that sounds kind of dull.
Which way would you rather get your thrills, in a sport you choose or in a war?
Point taken. So, the fleet officer.
Former officer.
And soon to be again. The officer says to look to our security first, which means to get the mutiny settled.
And then we see what we have to work with. There's no way to hold all this together by force, even with the full strength of fleet.
If you're right, Esme, and I have to say you may be, but we need to get you back in fleet as fast as possible.
I have no idea how a discharged officer gets back in service.
Harris Serrano did it.
With the help of the Serrano family, I don't doubt, which I don't have.
You have me on your side. That counts for something. I could tackle Admiral Serrano on your behalf.
Another ally appeared almost as soon as they were back at the Thornbuckle townhouse. A servant entered the sitting room.
General Casimir Sweeza.
Brun stared at Esme, and Esme, stunned, could not speak for a moment. Then she went to the door. Even out of uniform, Esme's father looked just as impressive.
Esme, I hope you'll let me in.
Of course.
Esme opened the door wider. She could feel Brun's curiosity at her back.
Father, may I present my friend, Brun Meager. Brun, my father, General Casimir Sweeza.
Esme's father stepped forward with something just shy of military precision and extended his hand. Brun rose.
Sir Amiga, it is an honor to meet you.
General, the honor is mine as well. You'll want to be alone.
Not at all. Please, stay. At least until I've explained why I'm here.
Brunn sat back down, but gave Esme a glance.
Yes. Please, stay.
Esme, I know I've failed you in the past, but I couldn't sit home and see you in trouble again without at least trying to help.
Sit down.
Esme waved to the couch. Her father sat and clasped his hands.
How did you get here so fast?
Someone sent word when you were discharged to your home of record. Apparently, that's standard procedure. But you'll understand it took quite a while for news of that to get to Altiplano. Then I heard you'd gotten on a merchant ship.
The Terrakion Fortune.
Yes. There were delays in contacting Admiral Serrano, because she was in transit, and because Fleet wasn't too cooperative with me in granting Ansible access to what they called foreign military. The thing you need to know first, Esmea, is that Admiral Vida Serrano had nothing to do with your discharge.
She didn't?
No. She was angry, and so was I, that you young people chose to get married without anyone's consent. She was angry about what she thought our family had done to the Serrano patrons. But we agreed that history can wait while we deal with the present crisis.
The thought of her father and Admiral Serrano concentrating their formidable executive powers on her career gave Esme a shiver of apprehension.
Then the captain of the trader ship sent me a priority message from Zenebra, so I knew where you'd be next. And here I am. And don't tell me you don't need help.
He glanced at Brunn.
Everyone needs help sometimes. It is no reflection on your ability and independence. You've proven that.
Thanks.
But I can ask you what Admiral Serrano can't. Do you want to get back in the fleet and command ships? Or would you rather go back to Altiplano? Or settle in the Familias as a civilian?
Space. But what about...
First things first. That was first, finding out what you wanted. The next complication is your status as land bride. I've argued the Landsman's Guild into allowing you to resign in absentia, and Lucy can be invested without delay. We will need several locks of your hair, if you could manage even a short braid.
Of course. And do I need to sign anything?
I brought the order of renunciation. Esmea, I want you to know that you will always be welcome at home. Lucy says that too. She's still managing your herd. Your Starmount Award grant will always be yours. Your children, should you and Baron have children, which I hope you do, will be welcome there as well, and considered legitimate heirs to the Estancia.
Father, I do love the land. And Altiplano.
I know that. And Altiplano is very proud of its hero. Thank God you're not shutting me out. I was so afraid.
From the distance of several years, Esme's anger now looked more like a local storm than a planet-circling cataclysm. He had been wrong. He was trying to make amends. He did love her.
I'm glad you're here.
It surprised her because it was true. She had been baffled, and now she had an ally of no mean ability, one who was not trapped in a hospital bed.
Are you going to send the braid and certificate back to Altiplano, or carry them?
Carry them. Both Lucy and the Landsman's Guild believe the land bride's hair must not be consigned to the post like an ordinary object. I will need to make an Ansible call back to tell them you're willing, and then I can stay long enough to be sure you get back into fleet without trouble.
I only have one uniform. The others were in transit when they discharged me. And who knows where they are now?
Surely this place has some military tailors who can fit you out.
Well, yes.
Esme wasn't used to spending the kind of money it would take to replace all her uniforms.
Don't worry. Consider it my belated gift to you. Now, if you don't mind, I should make that call as soon as possible. Lucy's wedding is being held up, pending the...
Of course. There's a terminal over in the banking center.
While her father went to make his call, Esme showered and washed her hair. She didn't cut it, having a vague memory that the hair must be cut in front of official witnesses.
Do you want us to go or stay, Esme?
Oh, stay, please. I don't know if he'll need additional witnesses or not. That is, if you're willing.
Oh, I wouldn't miss this for the world. This whole land bride thing fascinates me. And it's not just the fancy dress.
When her father returned, he had brought along the Altiplano docent, The representative, who had no seat on council but was allowed to submit minutes on Altiplano's behalf. Esme had never met him.
Landbride Suiza, it is an honor.
Dilson Faiza.
It is my understanding that you intend to renounce your position in favor of a younger relative. Is this true?
It is.
In accordance with law and custom, belief and practice, it is my duty to be sure that this is indeed your will. If you will excuse us.
The docent's gaze swept the room. Esme's father, Brun, and Kate retired into the hall. Esme noticed now that he held the paper, which must be the order of renunciation. Her stomach clenched. Now that it came to it, the very feel of the earth beneath her bare feet that morning when she had sworn to protect the land forever came back to her.
I renounce that?
Do you swear, Landbride Suiza, that you desire this of your own will, that no one has threatened you or done you harm or coerced you in any way to renounce your status?
He gazed at her solemnly. Esme could hear the wind of Altiplano blowing through the summer grass, smell the rich fragrance of the summer pastures. Yet, much as she loved it, she did not love it enough.
I so swear.
Do you swear, Landbride Suiza, that your reason for this renunciation is your sincere care for the land of Suiza, and that your chosen successor will, in your unquestioning belief, protect this land better than you yourself could?
Yes, for Lucy had the undivided heart, as well as the intelligence and the character.
I so swear.
He lowered the paper.
I'm sorry, Landbride Suiza. Though I am not a Suiza, and it has been years since I was home, I had been so proud of you. You made Altiplano famous, in a good way.
I can't do both, and I was away too long. I wanted to do the best for the land, but I don't know enough about it. My cousin does. She's been my agent.
He picked up the paper again.
Very well. Now, I need three witnesses to shearing your hair, and also, I need your signature.
Esme called the others, and they came back. Docent Faiza spread the document on the table.
Now you sign, and then your witnesses. And, Landbride, you must add a drop of blood.
Here, Esme.
Her father took a small, sheathed knife from his vest pocket.
This is the knife that has been used in the family for generations.
Most correct, Landbride.
Esme slipped the small knife from the tooled leather sheath. She remembered seeing it on her great-grandmother's desk. She always thought it was just a letter opener. She pricked her left ring finger with the sharp tip and squeezed a drop of blood onto the parchment. Then she took the pen the docent offered her and signed her name. Her father handed her the Landbride's seal, and she stamped it in blood, the most solemn of all seals. Then her father signed, and Brun and Kate.
In the old days, a Landbride renouncing her position would cut off all her hair, that it might go into the wind's offering. But since you're going to have to live here in the Familias...
They've seen bald women before. Besides, I can get a wig, if you think it's best.
If you're willing. It would certainly please the older members of the Landsmen's Guild.
What Baron would think of a bald wife, if she saw him again before her hair grew out, she didn't know. But the ache below her breastbone told her this was the right thing to do.
According to my researches, they did not shave their heads, merely cut their hair as short as they could. Then they went into exile from their former lands until it grew long enough to touch the shoulders.
A very practical way, Esme realized, to ensure that the new land bride had time to gain control without interference from the former land bride.
I expect I'll be away longer than that.
It will be easier if we braid it here. Sit down.
She tried to coax the first strands into a braid.
Good grief, it's fluffy.
I just washed it, you know that.
We'll have to get it wet again, or we'll have wisps instead of braids. Kate, bring me a bowl of water.
Docent Faiza was disposed to be solemn about it, but even his solemnity was no match for the cheerfully irreverent banter of Brun and Kate as they struggled with Esme's recalcitrant hair.
I know I told you to get a layered cut next time, but this is ridiculous. Nothing's the same length as anything else.
When they were done, Esme had little tufts standing up where the braids had been, and even her father and the docent couldn't keep a straight face.
You should be glad we're your friends, Esme. If we wanted to blackmail you...
I've been teased about my hair all my life. You can't embarrass me that way.
I wish you the best of luck in your military career, Esme Suiza. You have brought honor to Altiplano, and I'm sure you will bring more.
Docent Faiza rolled up the document, tied a black ribbon around it, and handed it to Esme's father.
You'll join us for some refreshment?
Forgive me, General, but I cannot at this time. Later, perhaps?
Of course. I expect to be here several days.
The planetside headquarters of the regular space service comprised a warren of buildings that radiated from the back of the Ministry of Defense, tunneling under and bridging over streets and tramways, and throwing out subsidiary departments into odd corners of other governmental offices. Esme, her father, Brunn, and the docent of Altiplano began at the front end, at the Ministry of Defense, where a harassed staff immediately determined they were in the wrong place.
Try recruiting. It's in the midget building.
It's a personnel matter, not a recruiting matter.
That would be the Corby building. You have to go through security first. That way.
That way led down a long hall that wound to the right, then back to the left, and finally led them up a ramp to an elevated walkway along one side of a courtyard. At the far end of the walkway, they came to the first set of guards.
We are looking for the Corvi building. They said it was this way.
You don't have any ID tags.
Do we need ID tags?
Visitors are supposed to get ID tags at the kiosk by the entrance.
There wasn't one.
Right by the State Street entrance.
We didn't come in the State Street entrance. We came in the Low Street entrance.
You're supposed to have ID tags to come in that entrance at all. Wait here.
The guard stepped back and spoke into his comm unit. They couldn't hear what he said. His eyes never left them. Then he stepped forward again.
Which sept are you?
Barraclough. Why?
You're the old speaker's daughter. You're Brunn Meager.
Yes?
I never thought I'd get to meet you. You look different in that suit. I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you right away. And these are friends of yours?
Yes.
Oh, well then, I'm sure it's all right. If I could just see your ID to have it on the records.
Brunn handed it over. Esme was appalled that they called this security. She was glad Kate had decided not to come with them. The guard waved them through double doors into another corridor, a bridge over a street, and at the far end, another guard opened the matching doors for them.
Sarah Meager, it's an honor. I'm calling ahead so you shouldn't be stopped again. Just go down this ramp, turn left, take the first corridor to the right, and keep going straight across the Sif Memorial Garden to the side door of Corvi. Go in that side door. I'm calling Bev and she'll be expecting you.
Well, that's more like it. Thank you.
The Sif Memorial Gardens was only a small courtyard with a plinth in the middle, two straggly trees, four flower beds, and two benches. Straight across, with a detour around the plinth, brought them to the side door of the Corvi building, where a woman let them in.
Sarah Meager. I'm so glad to meet you. And you, of course, Sarah Suiza. Although I should know your rank, I just don't remember.
Esme could see in the corridor ahead figures moving about in the familiar uniform.
Sarah's fine.
The woman pulled out four violently pink tags with little clips attached.
I have temporary tags for all of you. These are only day passes. I believe your permanent passes will be ready this evening or tomorrow.
After all this confusion, Esme thought she was prepared for almost anything, except for the discovery that her discharge hadn't yet been transmitted to headquarters, and therefore they couldn't reinstate her.
Why not? Can't you at least take my application and the proof that I'm no longer a land bride? So when it comes in...
Well, we could if it weren't for the mutiny. See, we have to run everything like that past the Judge Advocate General's office. And right now they're having some kind of snit fit because the Admiral in charge disappeared and they think he's part of the mutiny.
And that means?
It means they won't take anything from us without a complete file. For the complete file, we'd need a copy of the discharge order with the file number and your PRS-87, your personnel file.
Well, isn't there a copy of that here?
Yes, of course. But it may not be complete because your most recent evaluations may not have been forwarded yet. I can't think why the discharge wasn't unless it was canceled.
Canceled?
Well, if someone overruled whoever signed it when they got it, then they might have sat on it until you showed up and they could tell you. Let's see, where were you discharged?
Trinidad Station.
Oh, dear.
What?
You haven't heard? Trinidad was sacked by the mutineers several weeks ago. We can't get any records out of them. Do you have a discharge order?
Yes.
Esme took it out and handed it over.
Some people can't even sign their names legibly. I'll call up your file and we'll see how out of date it is.
Her file was up to date, only as far as the ill-fated leave to visit Baron and his family.
Nothing here about a discharge. The emergency orders that sent you from there to your next ship are here, but no more.
He paused, looking thoughtful.
If the discharge hasn't gone through, Lieutenant, you may actually be down as AWOL. You'd better go check with personnel assignment. I can't access their server from this station. That's in 2345. In the meantime, I'll ask what we'd better do about clearing this discharge up when we don't actually have it. Our CO's in a meeting, but he'll be back in the office any time now.
Trailed by her support group, Esme headed off for 2345. Up a lift and down another long corridor. Once in personnel assignment, she gave her name to the clerk and explained briefly that she was trying to straighten out her records.
You're in trouble, Lieutenant. You overstayed your leave, and we have you listed as a deserter. I'm gonna have to call this into the Judge Advocate General's office. Please, do not try to leave. Here, you were notified twice.
He turned the screen so she could read it. First, there was a message addressed to her on the transport Rosa Gloria, pointing out that she had not reported for duty as ordered at Harrakhan, and warning that she would be considered AWOL if she did not report within 24 hours, and a deserter if she had not reported within seven days. A second message to the same address informed her that she was now considered a deserter and should turn herself in to the nearest fleet facility or face pursuit and arrest. Both time limits had long since expired.
Great. Now I can be prosecuted for desertion after being thrown out of my ear. I never got those notices. I wasn't on that ship because I'd been discharged.
Do you have proof of discharge that predates this notice? We should have had any such discharge in our records, which would have automatically canceled this notice.
Good thing we made those certified copies of your discharge certificate. Maybe we should have made more.
Esme handed over one of the copies, and the clerk compared the dates and consulted a graphic of relative dates. Sure enough, she had been discharged at Trinidad well before she was supposed to have reported at Harrakhan.
Well, then you're cleared of these charges presumptively, but I'll have to get it signed off. Just wait right here. If you leave, I'll have to assume you're deserting again.
He disappeared with all the documentation.
I didn't desert the first time.
Oh, this is stupid.
No, it's the military. I hate to admit it, but even in Altiplano, we have mix-ups like this. Of course, there I can usually cut through it in less time. But even generals, and admirals, obviously, are at the mercy of clerks at times.
He looked around the office.
I'm going to get us some chairs. We may be here a while.
He left before Esme could say anything.
He reminds me of my father in some ways. Pretty much unflappable.
Esme did not mention that Brun's father had been capable of flapping quite a lot when Brun was in danger. In a few minutes, her father returned with two chairs.
Here, have a seat. This is actually a magic trick, because as soon as we get comfortable, they'll be back to tell us to go somewhere else.
Sure enough, Esme and Brun had only just relaxed when the clerk bustled back in.
There you are. Where'd you get those chairs? There aren't supposed to be chairs in here.
I brought them. I'll take them back.
You shouldn't have. Lieutenant, or Sarah, well, since you're not a lieutenant now, Major Tenerife is trying to access your personal record to see if that discharge certificate is genuine. It's not the original, you know.
They have the original down in 1118. I left it with them because they hadn't received anything on the discharge yet.
Esme wondered just how soon after she'd left, the mutineers had hit Trinidad Station.
It's most irregular. You'll need to speak to Major Tenerife.
Is he free?
Well, not now. He's on the horn trying to get your records.
But at that moment, a major emerged from behind a screen.
Sweeza?
I'm Esme Sweeza.
Damnedest thing I ever heard of. I've called JAG, and they're willing to agree that you are not, at present, a deserter. But that still leaves a mess. Either the discharge was valid or it wasn't. If it was, you're completely clear of charges of desertion, and you're a civilian. You'd have to apply to enter fleet as a civilian with a lapse in service and a considerable blot on your record. If the discharge wasn't valid or was canceled somewhere in the process of completion, then it's worse. You could be reinstated, of course. If you were reinstated as of the date of discharge, which would be normal if the discharge were shown to be a fake, then you were actually on active duty when the notices of AWOL and desertion were sent, and the defense that you'd been discharged prior to that is no longer valid. You'd have to stand at least a judicial inquiry to ensure that you were not at fault, that you had reason to believe you'd been legitimately discharged, that it wasn't some plot you cooked up to avoid duty in time of war.
The discharge certificate?
Well, yes, you have one, but it would still be a matter for formal inquiry. If you're reinstated as of this date, that means something has to explain the gap, besides the loss of time for pay and promotion consideration. And it's messed up the assignment process. Someone else took over your slot. We can't bump them out just because you showed up. We need you combat experienced people, but we do not need a mess like this. And you need a friend in high places. You don't happen to know Grand Admiral Savanche, do you?
No, sir. The only admiral I know is Admiral Serrano. Vita Serrano?
Ah, her. Well, if the Serranos are behind you, that might help. But rumor has it they're peeved with you.
Some of them.
You'd better hope she's not one of the peeved ones.
Fleet Headquarters Planetside had access to Fleet Ansible communications, but it took the combined efforts of Esme, Brunn, and General Sweeza to convince someone to try to reach Admiral Vita Serrano, who had just taken over at Sector 7. But they finally did.
Reinstate her at once and get her out here where we need her. Mutineers are attacking civilian ships.
It took more than that one message, but by afternoon the next day, Major Tenerife was much more cheerful about the situation.
JAG's dropped the desertion charge. Apparently, it's been decided the discharge was a valid order when you got it, but a mistake at a higher level and didn't get here because of the mess at Trinidad. Someone's probably got into a lot of trouble, but not at this point, you. However, we do have some urgency in getting you back to duty. When can you be ready to travel?
Pay and allowances?
Oh, of course. I guess if you haven't been paid since... Well, that would be before you went on leave, right? And didn't your luggage catch up with you? No? Then you'll need some things, I imagine. Well, we don't issue pay here, but over in the Bursar's division, you can get any monies owed. But can you be ready to travel in, let's see, it's already 1500, 2 days? That will put you aboard our next transport to Sector 7.
Yes, sir.
Good. We already cut your orders. You're going out to Sector 7 to command Rascal, an upgraded patrol class.
Command a ship? Me?
I don't see why not.
We're short-handed, Lieutenant. You're the next qualified person on the list, and you are command track.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. It's just a surprise.
That's all right. We've had similar reactions from some other younger officers who weren't aware they now qualified for ship command.
He turned to the clerk.
Get those orders cut for shuttle transport day after tomorrow. You'll want to get your credit updated before you leave, Sweeza. I've already told the Bursar's office to expect you.
Thank you, sir.